All right. New Zealand, huh? Kiwis, those landscapes, and get this, your relatives ended up there. Family history on an island nation, and wow, you've dug up some incredible research.
It's amazing, isn't it, how your family story ties back to centuries of migration, people journeying to New Zealand, and we're not talking about a quick trip to the store either.
So the Maori people, right. But their journey didn't exactly begin in New Zealand, did it?
Not at all. Your research points to something incredible, the ancestors of the Maori setting off from Taiwan.
Taiwan. Whoa, now that's what I call a long-distance move.
You can say that again. Imagine navigating across Southeast Asia into the vast Pacific way before European explorers. Mind-boggling, right? And there's evidence. Genetic studies, archaeology, it all points to migration starting as early as 1300 AD. Can you believe that?
1300 AD. That's crazy specific. How do they even figure that out?
Ever heard of the Karawa Tephra? It's a layer of volcanic debris from a massive eruption around 1314 AD. Think of it like a volcanic timestamp.
A giant layer of ash saying, nope, taken, this land spoken for.
Exactly. No human artifacts or remains found underneath it. It's a major clue about when people first arrived.
Makes sense. Okay, so jump ahead a bit. More you're established, then the Europeans show up. Cue dramatic music.
Not so fast. Those mentions of the Chatham Islands in your research, remember those?
Oh, right. What's the connection there?
They were settled by the Moriori, shared ancestry with the Maori, but their trip happened later, around 1500 AD. Imagine, island hopping across a giant ocean. Talk about adventurous.
Wow, two big migrations,
Yeah.
centuries apart. Okay, now the Europeans can make their big entrance, right?
Right, but that first encounter, not exactly smooth sailing. Picture the 1642. Abel Tasman, he's a Dutch explorer, sails right into Golden Bay on the South Island.
Sounds nice so far.
Not quite. Tasman and his crew met with resistance by the local Maori, the Ngāti Tuatha Dé. Tensions high, and, well, Tasman, he names the bay Murderer's Bay after the whole thing. Talk about an overreaction.
Someone needed a timeout. So much for first impressions, right? That wasn't the end of Europeans in New Zealand, was it?
Definitely not. Your research shows more Europeans, mainly British, coming in during the 19th century. And here's the thing, some Maori leaders actually encouraged it.
Real.
They saw opportunity, trade, technology, the whole shebang that comes with meeting new cultures.
I get that, but also recipe for conflict, right?
Exactly. Some settlers, they genuinely wanted peace, even made alliances with Maori tribes. But others, it was all about the land. And that, unfortunately, led to some nasty conflicts. By the 1860s, you've got British troops caught up in battles, protecting those settlers.
Sadly, a familiar story. Exploration often seems to lead to that. There's mention of a treaty, though, right, in your research.
Ah, yes. The Treaty of Waitangi, 1840. Huge deal in New Zealand's history. The goal, British rule, but also acknowledging Maori land rights. Imagine it like a balancing act, sharing land and power, but like any agreement, not perfect.
And those imperfections, I'm guessing they didn't just vanish?
You got it. Disagreements about what it all meant, how to make it work. To this day, the Treaty of Waitangi, still a huge topic in New Zealand. The complexities of history, land rights, how those early interactions still echo.
Wow. So much to think about. But here's the thing. This isn't just some history book, right? This is the world your family walked into.
Exactly. And knowing this context, it adds a whole other dimension to their individual stories.
That history really sets the scene, huh? And speaking of family, you've got three Farndale branches in New Zealand: Ronald in Masterton, Wilfred in Gisborne, and then Brian showing up in all sorts of spots. It's like a family tree coming to life.
It really is. Each one gives us a unique perspective on life in New Zealand during a specific time. Ronald's dealing with a post-WWII world. Wilfred's family follows their son to Gisborne. And Brian, well, Brian's our wild card. He leaves this trail that just screams adventurous spirit.
Okay, you've got my attention. Where do we even start with all this?
Ronald, born in 1919, connected to the Wakefield line, set sail for Wellington in 1936. He was only 17. 17 years old. That's practically sailing straight into adulthood, especially with a journey like that. You've got to wonder what kind of courage it took.
It's pretty bold, right?
Mm.
He starts working on farms in the Waikato region. But then, of course, World War II, that throws everything for a loop.
And his wartime experience, that's a whole other story, right?
Oh, absolutely. We'll come back to that.
Okay, keeping me in suspense. So, after the war, he ends up in Masterton.
That's right. He comes back to New Zealand, becomes a builder there. And Masterton, it's got its own fascinating history, you know? Your research points that out.
Okay, hit me with it. What's the Masterton lowdown?
All right, picture this. Masterton, it's founded mid-1800s. The idea, these small, almost village-like settlements supporting working people, getting them settled on the land, almost a utopian ideal, you know?
It sounds idyllic, but history tends to have other plans, right?
You said it. Masterton thrives for a bit, especially when the railway connects it to Wellington in 1880. It becomes this hub for trade, transportation.
For a while, yeah. But like lots of places growing that fast, it hits some bumps. Industrial accidents, the economy shifting. Your research even mentioned that terrible factory explosion in 1965.
Oh, wow. That's awful. It really makes you think.
Yeah.
Even in a seemingly perfect place, things can change just like that. So where does Ronald fit into all of this?
Ronald's story in Masterton, it almost mirrors those broader changes. As a builder, he was literally shaping the town brick by brick. Marries Margaret. They have a son, Maxwell. But tragedy strikes. Margaret passes away in 1956.
Oh, no.
He finds love again, though, remarries Doris. Together, they have a big family. Bruce, Wendy, James, Linda, Donna, and Robin. It seems like Masterton, even with its ups and downs, it became his home.
It's amazing how those personal stories weave into the town's own history. Speaking of, you mentioned Maxwell, right? He's the one with the news website.
That's him. Maxwell starts MSC Newswire. And from what I gather, he had a knack for seeing what was coming. Your research even mentions his site predicted Donald Trump's rise way before it was, well, a mainstream idea.
Whoa, hold on. He predicted Trump. Okay, your relative Maxwell was tuned in. Makes you wonder what he'd say about the world today. But let's switch gears a bit. Ronald's just one part of this family, right? There's also Wilfred. He ends up in Gisborne.
He does. But his path there, totally different. Wilfred's born in 1911, starts his journey in England. He's an aircraft engineer working near Bristol.
Bristol. That was a major hub for aircraft production in World War II, right?
Do you know your history? And during the war, he was right in the thick of it. Working near Bristol, commuting back and forth, while also manning anti-aircraft batteries. Can you imagine? Trying to keep your family safe with the constant threat of air raids.
Wow, talk about dedication.
Yeah.
So how does this English family end up in New Zealand?
Their son, Howard, he emigrates to Gisborne in 1959. The rest of the family follows 5 years later in 1964.
Gisborne. Now, that name rings a bell. It's on the coast, right?
Yeah. You got it. Gisborne's got a big place in New Zealand's history. Even going back to Captain Cook, it's where he first landed in 1769. Of course, the Maori people already lived there. They knew it as Taranga Nui Akiwa.
Try saying that three times fast. What does it mean?
It translates to Great Standing Place of Kiwa. Beautiful, isn't it?
So we're talking about a place steeped in history, even before Europeans arrived. What was life like there for Wilfred and his family?
They built a life there, just like Ronald did in Masterton. Wilfred, with his engineering background, he put those skills to work, helping build bridges in the area. Howard became a welder. Alan, after serving in the British Navy, he joins the New Zealand Navy. Your research even mentions their daughter Melanie performing in a local opera. Isn't that something?
I love those little details. Makes them feel so much more real.
Exactly. Family history isn't just about dates and places. It's about those moments, the passions, the connections that make a life. And those are the details that make your family's story so interesting.
It's amazing, isn't it? How Ronald and Wilfred's stories, they really paint a picture of life in New Zealand. But then there's Brian. He's like this mystery man in the family narrative.
He's our wild card, that's for sure. Your research on Brian is, well, it's more like puzzle pieces than a complete picture. We know he was born in 33, connected to the Norwich Line. His New Zealand adventure, it starts in the late 60s, a business trip from Australia. Then, bam, he pops up in New Plymouth.
New Plymouth. That's the spot known for that dramatic coastline, right? North Island.
You got it. Rugged beauty. They say it's connected to the Maori legend of Taranaki, the warrior mountain. Makes you wonder, did Brian, like that mountain, have this yearning for exploration for a challenge?
I can just picture it. Him standing on a cliff, wind whipping around, gazing out at the ocean. Quite a contrast to his relatives in Masterton and Gisborne.
A stark contrast indeed. But here's the thing. Brian's story, it doesn't stay put in New Plymouth. By the late 70s, we find him in Christchurch, South Island this time. Talk about a change of scenery.
So he goes from Wild West Coast to, what, the charm of the South, mountains and all that.
Exactly. New Plymouth, it's all Maori legends, untamed beauty, Christchurch. Think English heritage, gardens, a touch of that Victorian elegance.
Coast to mountains, legends to, well, a different kind of legacy. He certainly got around. But his story does feel more fragmented, like pieces of a map scattered about.
You're right. With Ronald and Wilfred, we have those personal stories, their families, their work, what made them tick. But Brian, it's like he left these breadcrumbs, hinting at a life less settled, maybe even intentionally private.
It's almost as if he's challenging us to chase him down through history. And you know what? That's kind of exciting.
It adds a certain intrigue, doesn't it? That's the beauty of family history, though. It's a journey, always the potential for a surprise just around the corner. And you've uncovered so much already. Your Farndale relatives, their trips to New Zealand, the history that shaped their lives, the joys, the heartbreaks, it all ties together.
It's like holding a mirror up to the past. But at the same time, it feels so relevant, even now.
Exactly. We've walked in their footsteps, haven't we? Taiwan to Taranaki, Masterton to Gisborne. We've seen echoes of their lives, the treaty negotiations, the bustling towns, those quiet family moments.
It's pretty amazing to think about. They're not just names on a page anymore. They're real people. They lived, they loved, faced their challenges, and built a legacy that led to you.
And that, I think, is what's important to remember. Family history. It's more than dates and facts. It's a story of courage, of resilience, the human spirit, you know?
It reminds us that history isn't just something in a textbook. It's personal, it's alive, and sometimes it's waiting to be discovered, right in our own backyards, or in this case, a beautiful island nation halfway across the world.